This is Small Town News. I'm Keith.
I'm Neil.
I'm George.
And I'm Craig.
And what we do each session is reread small town newspaper articles from small town newspapers somewhere across the United States. We are reading these articles for the first time. They are provided to us by the wonderfully talented but the woefully underpaid Dr. Saxon.
Oh, yeah.
From those articles, we might take a character, a situation, maybe just a singular word, and we're going to improvise stories around it. We're just trying to make big stories out of small town news.
Keith, we're going to get to where we are in a second, but do you see the picture that Dr. Jess has sent to us?
It is the what looks like the worst decoy duck I've ever seen in my life.
It looks like it's been bound and billed.
Yeah. Or the best. Do you see it looks like it has feathers? Is it a real duck?
I don't know. It looks like it's mostly like a bunch of balled up string, like a bunch of string.
Or they did take feathers and bind it together. Yeah, and I mean,
it's like it's a mummy duck. Is it a mummy duck? Like an Egyptian duck that has been
the worst horror film ever.
Duck mummy.
Okay. So where are we, George?
We are in Lovelock, Nevada. Ooh. With the Lovelock Review - Minor.
Spell it.
M-I-N-E-R.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Craig.
E-R. Welcome to Lovelock, Nevada, population 1,828, located in the northwestern Nevada. Lovelock is in the seat of Pershing County and is the county's only incorporated town. Reno, Nevada is 90 miles to the southwest. Originally called Big Meadows, the town was renamed Lovelock in the 1860s in honor of George Lovelock, a Welsh immigrant who, quote, bought 320 acres and received with it the oldest water rights to the nearby Humboldt River. The Lovelock Correctional Center is on the outskirts of the town. Opened in 1995, the prison's current population of inmates is roughly equal to the town's population. I was about to say, that's probably really close. O.J. Simpson served 9 years of his 33-year sentence at Lovelock Correctional before being paroled in 2017. 9 years.
Wait a second.
Did they just transfer people around in the system?
No, nobody ever really serves their full time, it seems like.
What did he get 33 years for?
That was the robbery.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Well, 33 years for that.
Well, I think they were probably a little pissed off about maybe the other.
The judge was making a statement. That was very clear.
Okay.
Black Rock City is located in the desert on a dried lake bed roughly 70 miles northwest of Lovelock. The town is constructed in a C shape each year. When finished, its streets form a two-thirds of a 1.5 mile diameter circle with the man at the very center. In 2019, 78,800 people attended the 9-day festival, paying up to $475 per ticket. That actually seems pretty cheap.
For 9 days, yeah.
Yeah. While the current festival happens in late August and early September, it started in the 1980s as a small summer solstice bonfire held on Baker's Beach in California. In the 1990s, the event expanded and moved to Black Rock Desert. Attendees, called burners, learned of the festival through word of mouth, and tickets were not sold. There were no paid or scheduled performers or artists, no separation between art and life, nor art space and living space. No rules other than don't interfere with anyone else's immediate experience, and no guns in central camp.
I love how vague one rule is and how very specific the other one is.
My immediate experience is guns
in central camp.
I was going to say, the specific one only denies them in one section.
Yeah. Central camp.
Yeah.
Can you turn someone in for harshing your mellow?
Apparently.
Okay.
At Burning Man, While the festival is now a ticketed event, burners are expected to provide for their own basic needs while in Black Rock City. Cash transactions are forbidden except for a few charity, fuel, and sanitation vendors. All other commodity transactions are gifts among burners. That's bullshit. Originally, burners were... It is. Gifts. That's stupid. And also just not true. I will give you a gift of this painting if you gift me with something in return.
This painting has George Washington on it.
It's like the pencil. It's like the pencil scalping scam you were talking about the other day. Yeah. I mean, I'll sell you this pencil for $200, but it comes with this ticket to the Duke Carolina basketball game.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's just bullshit.
Every time I think of Burning Man.
Nicolas Cage?
No.
Not Nicolas Cage, we're on the same page. I think of The Wicker Man.
Right. Okay.
But I'm thinking of the original, not that.
Yeah, no,
just...
A burning man.
Burning a man inside of a giant, wooden shell of a... Yeah, it's the solstice. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what that stuff was. Anyway.
I think of the Burning Man Festival.
I do too. Well, because I heard of the Burning Man Festival before I heard of the movie The Wicker Man.
Yeah.
But I've seen the movie Wicker Man. And I've never been to the Burning Man.
And I think I saw Wicker Man before I heard of Burning Man.
From what my friends have said, apparently the barter system is truly how everything is done there. Like,
so do you just bring a bunch of valuable things?
Or not just valuable things, like if you wanted to have a food truck.
Yeah.
Right? So your people are giving you things for food.
Yeah.
But and they also have a great medical tent, I've heard. A friend of mine.
I'm sure they have to.
Yeah.
What do you barter for medical supplies?
What if you run out of bartering things and then you get injured?
Yeah. I think that's just offered for free.
Oh,
yeah.
But like, that's good. I'm sure for the people who are there for the purest reasons, the bartering system works great.
Yeah.
But there are always those jackasses that come in, you know. Yeah.
With a truck of
horses. They're there to do drugs and see naked women. That's why they're there.
Yeah.
But the three things you can use dollars for: charity, fuel, and sanitation vendors. So you have to pay for the toilet.
Yeah, but
you
that's
barter
fair,
for the
right?
toilet.
That's fair.
I guess. I don't know. You, if you barter for food, you could barter for, you know, toilet time.
Used food.
Yeah.
You give me this food, and I'll come back in about an hour and give you some more.
I'll give it back to you.
Yeah, I'll give it back.
I just want to borrow it. Can I just borrow this food?
I'm sure that's mostly because they're out. Like, that is a regulated thing, like waste disposal. So I'm sure that's more of a, all right, you're just going to have to pay for this.
Yeah.
I wonder if the performers also are bartered.
Right.
Nope.
I would suspect so.
Yeah, they do have bands, right? They have bands there.
Yeah, they have bands.
So we will give you four squash.
No,
for your
capitalism reigns supreme when it comes to that.
Yeah, but so have you ever heard of who headlines Burning Man?
No.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I was gonna say it's,
yeah, they're not pulling tier one bands.
I was gonna say it's
not
Yeezy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm curious. Let me look up who's headlining Burning Man this year.
While you're looking up, I'll finish up the paragraph. All other commodity transactions are gifts among burners. Originally, burners were allowed to exchange favors for commodities, but favors, and this is Dr. Jess's statement, which I assume includes sexual favors, were soon banned, and it appears that the gifting system relies on the exchange of physical objects.
You're going to love when you ask Google, does Burning Man have a lineup? Burning Man does not have any fixed lineup or schedule. It is a collection of multiple events and happenings.
I hate
it. So there are no
happenings. Yeah, that made me hate it so fast.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
Yeah, I've had several friends who have gone and come back and explained their experiences to me, and it never makes me want to go. It always just sounds like chaos.
And desert.
And chaos in the desert. It's super hot. There's dust everywhere. Creepy people. And I was being a little sarcastic about the medical tent because my friend lost his big toenail and was like on mushrooms in a tent.
Oh.
Like, didn't know what was happening. Oh. And they're just like throwing dirt on top of it. Like,
oh my God, man. I'm so sorry. Situation. Like, have these mushrooms. Oh. Oh, I'm so
throwing
bad.
Dirt on top of it.
Yeah.
Or maybe it just wasn't a medical tent. He just thought it was because he was on
shrooms. Yeah, he's in a food tent. They just keep wrapping it up in a burrito shell.
Put some bacon on it. It's a bacon will make it work. What looks like a toenail? Oh, here's a clam shell. We'll tape that on there.
You wrap it in strips.
Like, you're going to have to go to the perimeter where we have guns to fix this.
Yeah. I have always wanted to, like, festivals like that, I would like to, I'm going to say this, it's going to sound bad, experience it. Like, from on high, like, removed.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be in a bubble with, like, stuff that I like, you know, like, maybe box seats to watch Burning Man.
You just want to watch the people, not the band.
Yeah. I don't have any interest in participating, but it's got to be a very interesting collective of folks, right?
I'm sorry. I'm just imagining the scenario where you're treating it like an ant farm.
Right.
That's exactly what it is.
But I would buy box seats to watch, like, the people
I'll
there.
I'll check that out.
And, like,
sure.
Coachella.
And, yeah, I went there in 19, and it sounds like it's kind of like a Burning Man, but money is very much important.
Oh yeah,
at Coachella, because you got to buy all the food and everything, and you're camping out. But most people are really,
when you lose your toenail, they give you quote unquote medicine.
Yeah, right. Exactly. They take care of you for dollars,
but the toilets were free, right?
Yeah, toilets.
Yeah,
were free.
Yeah, there you go. But like Sturgis, I mean, I would even like to see that from a removed place.
Yeah.
So I think that I always think those things are
bike,
very interesting.
Bike,
bike rally in South Dakota.
Yeah. Yeah. But they all seem very interesting. I just don't want to actually be involved.
You don't want to have to stay there. No, you want to be able to observe and then go home.
So, unfortunately, most of my life is wanting to see what's going on, but not be involved.
Yeah.
That's just sort of, looks icky. Let me just sit over here and see what's going on.
That's pretty standard. I mean, that's why reality TV is so popular.
But I hate reality TV.
And documentaries.
That's because they're following the wrong people.
They really are.
Yes.
Well, if Burning Man has too many people for your taste, my sweet curmudgeons, try the Lovelock Cave.
Did she put Neil in parentheses?
I'll tell you what. She said curmudgeons with an S, but we really know who she's talking to. That's kind of you, Jess. So if Burning Man has too many people for your taste, my sweet curmudgeons, try the Lovelock Cave, 30 miles south of town, 40 feet deep and 160 feet long. The double entrance cave.
Dude, no.
What do you mean?
My long cave.
I don't think that's how she wrote that.
I'm never certain if you mean to do that or not.
I'm always certain he means to do it.
I don't know what you mean.
It's that one word.
Just reading what's on the page. I mean, this is what Jess has given me to work with. This is the clay we're trying to mold into a pot. A deep pot, or maybe a really long pot.
Just keep reading.
The double entrance cave. Sorry. Look, I'm just reading the words on a page.
Here's the problem. You didn't have to make it innuendous. It was already there.
This double entrance cave was mapped.
So the funny part is, you know, she's listening to this. She's like, okay, here it comes. They all turn 12. Boom.
Boop. Well, it was first mapped in 1911, but has been used by humans since 2580 BCE. The 1911 mapping of the cave was for the excavation
of specificity of that. Like
2580?
Yeah.
They must have drawn it on a cave.
The what cave. They drew a picture of the cave on another
what
cave.
What year is it? 2580.
I was here. 2580 BCE.
They were that aware.
Because we know.
Right.
They were that aware.
They knew ahead of time. The 1911 mapping of the cave was for the excavation of bat guano. Bat shit, if you aren't feeling fancy about it. That's from Jess. The initial excavation removed 250 tons from a guano layer that was 3 to 6 feet deep.
Who decided to start collecting that?
What is it used for?
Fertilizer?
They may have also been trying to use the cave for something instead of the guano.
Just
guanos.
Like digging it out. Like, there's so much bat crap in here.
But you know what? She may tell us.
Here's the thing, though. The guano project was quickly halted, however, because guano miners were finding too many prehistoric human artifacts. Quote, ooh. The refuse left by the ancient people proved so plentiful that fertilizer could no longer be collected. Close quote.
Fertilizer.
There you go. Between 1912 and 1925, L.L. Loud, a University of California anthropology professor, led several cave digs for the...
don't encourage it.
For the Museum of the American Indian. His team discovered thousands of items, including a cache of 11 decoy ducks.
Oh!
Yeah. Prehistoric.
That's why they look
prehistoric. Yeah.
Oh. Weird.
Each of the decoys.
What if that's what ducks look like then?
Maybe
that's
very accurate.
Bat poop look like then. Yeah.
But what if they're extremely accurate?
Just a huge bat turd that happened to look like a duck decoy. Like,
keep this one. All the other shit, we'll get rid of it. But this
yeah.
One.
8 of the decoys were painted and feathered, and 3 were unfinished. The ducks were made between 300 BCE and 130 BCE. Based on the human coprolites, fossilized shit, if you aren't feeling fancy about it, and the cave's marshy location, waterfowl and fish were the primary diet of the cave's inhabitants. The cave's last use by human residents was in the 1850s. Evidence of their presence came from the discovery of a gun cache and lots of human coprolites. Coprolites.
Ooh, the coprolites. I wonder how I would have said that word.
Differently.
If you were looking for romance and not poop, head back into Lovelock and put up a Lovelock. Ooh. A Lovelock is a padlock that is affixed by a couple to a public structure, usually a bridge, fence, or gate.
Yeah.
It is often inscribed with the couple's name or initials, and the key is usually thrown away to symbolize their unbreakable love. The practice of love locking comes from a World War I era Serbian tale about two lovers. But love locking was not practiced outside of Serbia until the late 2000s, when it was popularized by an Italian novel and film. The town of Lovelock, attempting to capitalize on its name resemblance to the practice, built Lover's Lock Plaza in its downtown and encourages people to put their locks on chains strung between posts.
Road trip.
You want to go see the Lovelocks?
No.
You can see that in Greenville. They're
really? Everywhere now.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
No, but like, isn't it the spontaneity of it that makes it interesting, right? It's not like you go to this.
That's what makes it romantic.
Like, you don't go to a store to go put a lock. Like, okay, well, here's the place where you put the locks. Yeah.
But that is how it is.
Yeah.
I know it becomes that.
Yeah.
But that's like the town, like, that's their thing. Oh, well, let's create this.
Oh, right. Really, they're trying to capitalize on their name.
There's a gate in New Orleans that's got thousands.
Yeah. But this also sounds like the cheapest freaking version of that ever. Chain strung between posts.
It's just, yeah, clotheslining people. They're just walking down the street for love, and they walk into a chain.
But not even like a fancy gate on something. They put a friggin' chain between posts for you.
Well, especially if
on.
It's not at a location that actually means something to you. Like, that's the part that would cemented for me.
Yeah, is it scenic? Is it no? It's a chain between two posts.
Because there's a bridge in Paris, right?
Which I get that more because, you know, people always associate
scenic.
France.
Right. And it's scenic.
Romance. Everybody associates France with romance.
Most other towns and cities remove locks and have criminalized them as acts of vandalism. Some even cite love locks as public safety hazards. In 2014, a parapet on Paris's Pont des Arts Bridge collapsed under the weight of the love locks.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of love. In 2015, a bicyclist in Winnipeg, Canada, was seriously injured by love locks on a bridge. Her arm was snagged by the locks as she rode by, and the injury required 21 stitches.
No.
What kind of freaking lock was
Holy
that?
Holy crap.
Combination, I guess.
Combination of barbed wire and, I don't know, spikes?
Also, the original Serbian tale ends in heartache. Oh. The Serbian man goes off to war. He falls in love with a Greek woman and marries her. And the Serbian woman dies of a broken heart.
You mean it didn't work? Have fun in Lovelock. Do your best to live by the Berners Creed of never interfering with anyone else's immediate experience. Leave some poop in a cave for later archaeologists to discover and ponder. And while Craig knows better than to do this with me, if your wives are game, put up locks for your unbreakable love in the plaza.
There you go.
We both saw it in New Orleans and rolled our eyes at it.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Sidebar. Burning Man has an absolutely fascinating survival guide. For a sample, check out the Relationship Survival Guide at long web address and the Human Waste Disposal Guide at another long web address.
What to do with your poop?
Yeah.
What to do with your loved one's poop?
I'm guessing they burn it at the end of the festival, right?
I think
they do. Put it all in that big wooden man. That's what you do.
It's called Poop Man. It's just outside of camp. Yeah. So central camp, no guns, and everybody loves each other, and it's very artistic. Just outside of camp, just a wasteland of burning poop and people shooting at each other.
So the 475 is for a bulletproof vest.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, it's for a spot at central camp.
Yeah. Once you get to central camp, it's great, but you do have to go through the gauntlet on your way out.
Post-apocalyptic wasteland that is the desert.
You've got Mad Max 18-wheelers trying to chase you down and either grab your poop or burn poop.
People throwing copper lights at each other. It's crazy.
If you can make it through the apocalyptic landscape, though, you will find a very peaceful community.
Yeah, nobody interferes with your immediate experience there.
No.
But you have to get there first.
But everyone outside of it, they want your gasoline.
They'll interfere the hell out of your immediate experience on the way in. But once you get there.
Art program promotes transforming trash into treasure by Deborah Reed.
This is interesting. This is unfortunately not our first time hearing a story
trash
about people
book.
Taking trash and turning it into something they sell to others.
Yeah.
The whole book was trash.
Yeah. The entire book was trash.
Yeah. Trash novel.
Trash novel.
A tiny spam can chair indicates that everyday trash really can be transformed into treasure. Richard Potashin of Kingston, Nevada, paid a talented but homeless artist.
Richard Pot of Shit?
Potashin. Potashin.
Richard Potashin.
Here's your spam can chair. Your papa squat.
Right, I'm sure he's a nice guy. We shouldn't make fun of his name.
No, that's right.
Potashin.
Just a spam chair.
Richard Potashin of Kingston, Nevada, paid a talented but homeless artist for the elaborate sculpture about 25 years ago, and it is still one of his favorite examples of creative recycling. He was going to give it to me, and I'm going to pay you for that. What in the hell does that mean? That is the worst quote ever. He was going to give it to me, and I'm going to pay you for that,
he
said.
That's the best quote ever. That's commonly said during Burning Man.
Give it to me. I will pay you for that.
Oh, wow.
What are you selling? Immediate experiences.
With a side of Nikot.
Wow. That is like a work of art. He was making airplanes, chairs, and all kinds of other items. He was an artist who just happened to be homeless. You can see the detailed ornamentation. He probably took it out of a trash can or dumpster somewhere. What a great thing to do with a can of Spam. Potashin displayed this and other pieces at last week's Art from Recycled Materials workshop in Lovelock. We have a really good reputation for having clean material, but even when we didn't have 0.05%, so we have added 4 optical sorters and made several upgrades so we can try to meet those demands. Right across the bridge in East Bay, all the glass bottles get remade into new glass bottles. You can recycle glass and metal over and over. Plastic is often downcycled into other products such as fleece jackets and park benches. Monk said only the selected artists and not the public are allowed to scavenge for items. It's a liability issue. The only people who are allowed to scavenge are the artists, and they go through a very extensive safety training and sign a bunch of waivers, she said. Sign a bunch of waivers.
That's the training. That's what the training's for.
Exactly.
We don't want to get
sued.
Can
you hold this pen?
Hi, I'm going to make this sculpture out of used hypodermic needles. Nope.
Yeah. However, at our openings, which happen every 4 months, we have giveaway piles. They'll pull out fabric or books or something. The public can take from there, and we clean everything. So that's the junk that's not good enough to be art junk, I suppose.
A giveaway pile, they're making you take the trash away and put it somewhere else.
Yeah. That reminds me, like, you will see stuff on, like, Facebook Marketplace and stuff like that where people are just like, you know, free firewood. Just come to my property and cut down this tree. Bring your own tools. Oh, wait. And in some cases, they don't even say free. There's kind of like, hey, firewood, like $100. It's this tree. Chop it down. Bring your own materials. I mean, charge more if I have to help. This is real.
No, I saw one. It was this rotted picture of this rotted ass deck. And they were like, deck being replaced. And they wanted like $200 for the wood that was the deck. But you had to come disassemble it yourself.
Yep.
Did somebody do it, though?
God, I hope not.
God, I kind of hope so.
Some really gullible person probably did it.
I don't know. That's just the level of selfishness I don't understand. Like, if I were so bold to try and do some of that, I'd just be like, just come dismantle it. Yeah. Don't mess up my house. And it's free. Yeah. Like, that's fine. If you come and do that, that's worth it for me.
But maybe there's the perception of value. If you don't put a dollar on it, the people think, oh, that's trash. He's giving it away. Perception of value.
I think there are a lot of people, like the people who will do that, who will put the labor into that, I think are looking for the freebies and things they can take.
Yeah.
And you know what happened was the contractor gave the price. Well, that's too high. Well, if you demo it yourself, I'll take up $1,000.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, oh, yeah, I'll put that on Facebook Marketplace. Have that gone. I'll charge somebody $500. Yeah. I'm going to save.
I mean, it's worth $1,000. I should be getting $1,000 for this.
No, I've got an estimate. It costs $1,000.
Yeah.
Okay, we cut to a 5-year-old birthday party. There are 5-year-olds and their respective parents all around there. The parents of the birthday girl are calling everybody together. Okay, everybody, thank you for coming to Tiffany's birthday party. We're about to cut the cake now. So all the parents, if you want your kids to receive a piece, please come and give your $2 to me, and we'll make sure that the pieces of cake get distributed to your respective kids. We'll give you a ticket to make sure.
I think I may have misheard that. Did you say $2 for a slice of birthday cake?
Yes, that's correct. $2 for a slice of cake. I mean, the party is free, of course. We're not barbarians. But, I mean, let's be honest. We're celebrating the birth of Tiffany here. I've already invested quite a bit of money into this kid. So I think this birthday party is probably the best chance that I got to kind of get some of that return of investment, you know?
Okay.
Cakes cost money.
Okay, yeah, they do. But on the invitation, it said, birthday party, cake and ice cream will be served.
That is correct.
There was no monetary value placed on those.
Well, there's a lot of restaurants that serve cake and ice cream as well, but they don't put on all their advertisements, hey, and you bring your monies.
That's a different transaction. And Little Jack really wants a piece of cake. I didn't bring any cash.
$2 is kind of a
Oh, you didn't bring any cash. Oh, well, then the bouncy house is going to be a really big disappointment there.
What?
Oh, yeah. You want to get into... Look, everything costs money. I don't own a bouncy house. I had to rent it, okay? I didn't make this cake. I had to buy it.
I thought I understood it correctly.
Uh-huh.
I have this sculpture that of ice cream that I made out of leftover lettuce that I found in my yard.
Oh, that is exquisite.
Yeah, and I made this cake out of... a banana stem.
I don't see a lot of the kids coming to get your cake personally.
Oh, but is that one free? Is your cake free?
I was using mine as currency, but I'm happy to exchange.
Oh, I didn't. All I brought to the party was this gift I was going to give to Tiffany, but I'll have a slice of your banana stem cake.
I think, you know, here's I think I'll give you my gift as well.
Yeah,
whoa, cake. Those are Tiffany's gifts.
No, they were.
We thought we were guests to a party. Apparently, this is some sort of barter system, and okay. I'm fine with it if you are.
Okay, I understand what's
happening. Good luck getting rid of all that cake.
Hey, I understand what's happening. That's fair, but let me just put this out there, okay? Do you want banana stem cake, or do you want your child to get into the bounce house?
I think banana stem cake.
I mean, I've never had it. I think it's worth it. I have this really this limited edition Barbie doll I was going to give to Tiffany. It's worth about $100, but I'm fine just taking some trash cake.
I would love to have that Barbie doll if you would like to have this bucket of broken glass. I use it as a bouncy house.
Has it been cleaned?
Okay, for the next 10 minutes only, I would like to offer, in addition to a slice of cake, for proper bartering, we'll also give you 10 minutes in the bounce house. That's right. Slice of cake, 10 minutes in the bounce house for...
Wait, exclusive time in the bounce house, or will there be other children there?
Because the bucket of glass is looking really appealing at the moment.
It's a five-year-old's birthday party. What is your five-year-old doing with a bucket of glass?
How many other times are you going to get a chance to jump around in a bucket of glass?
I've got some money I'll throw in with the Barbie doll for that glass.
It is so much easier to find broken glass than it is a bounce house.
Depends on where you are. You don't have any glass in your yard. I looked.
Where do you live? And who the hell are you with a bucket of glass? Do you have a kid?
I'm Jerry's dad.
Oh, you're Jerry's dad.
Yeah.
Which one's Jerry?
He's the one in the corner that's made out of garbage.
Insane.
Yeah, I didn't think about the presence part when I started that improv. I was like, that's right. Yeah, in a way, you are paying.
Yeah. It's kind of a price of admission.
That's right.
Especially at five, because as they get older, it's like, oh, you don't need to bring a gift. Your presence is your present.
So, like, are there other events as we get older akin to a child's birthday party where you are, in essence, paying for an experience where you otherwise wouldn't think of it that way?
Weddings.
Yeah, weddings.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Engagement parties and weddings.
Yep. Yep. And weddings showers, are things that... Yep.
No, and apparently, I only give one gift for like the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Like that's the thing.
Yeah, the hard part is like you guys did it right. This is but like second weddings where people want to make a big deal about it. It's like, nah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I really
I already
what you
gave
guys
it
did.
The office.
It was like the perfect style of, because we're older now. It's not that.
We don't want to ask everybody to give us much stuff. And
well, and you have so much shit already. Yep. I mean, you're bringing two households together.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're having to throw shit out anyway if you're...
Yeah. You already have two toasters.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Don't give me a third.
But there's some people that, like, they want that that big experience again. Yes. And it's like, nah.
You know, I'm gonna do a present protest from here on out. Any gift, anything, anything at all, toaster.
You're just
going to
do toaster every time?
I thought you were going to show up with a sign.
Copper light.
That'll be $50.
That's right. I'm starting to give copper light.
Copper light. Fossilized.
Yeah. Every single one of your birthdays from here on out is a toaster.
I'm giving
pre copper
light.
Ooh, fresh.
Yeah. Let you make your own copper light. In 1,000 years. It's like a bond, really. A savings bond.
It'll mature.
It's a crystal ripen. Box. That's future copper light.
What's in the box?
Gymkhana Rides Again. By Peggy Jones. Get out the lawn chairs and beach umbrellas. The Northern Nevada Gymkhana Club began its third season on Saturday at the fairgrounds. About 24 riders competed alongside their families. The next Gymkhana is on Sunday, May 19th. It starts at 9 a.m. This is spelled J-Y-M-K-H-A-N-A.
Question.
Uh-huh.
Beach chair?
Yeah, get out your...
Do they call them that? I mean, that I think that was surprising for me.
I have a chair and I call it my beach chair.
We have a beach.
No, yeah, no, lawn chairs and beach umbrellas.
But you don't have a specific chair that you take to the beach?
They're in Nevada.
It's all beach.
Oh.
It's like desert. Well, no, it's like the never-ending beach.
But at some point, water has to begin. Yeah.
But it doesn't begin in Nevada.
Well, exactly. So it's beaches at Salt Lake City or Salt Lake, what's the big, Lake Mead? I mean, they do have
beaches. That's fair. Okay, that's fair.
In Nevada.
All right. I just don't think of lakes as...
Yeah, I don't either. No. That's just desert with a break.
Anybody understand what Gymkhana is yet so far by the context of the...
You know what? This writer isn't Jess. But I'm hoping she explains it.
No, but what do you think it means?
It's like a root that you chew on.
Gymkhana rides again.
It looked to me like a character in like what was that fighting game that was?
Oh, popular? Like Mortal Double
Kombat?
Dragon.
Yeah, it's like a Mortal Kombat character. Was all I could come.
Gymkhana. When I read it. Yeah. Wins.
Finish him. Get over here.
There's a movie called Gymkhana.
Is that J-I-M Kata? Like Jim Kata?
No, it's G-Y-M Kata. It starred like some Olympian gymnast, and instead of like kung fu fighting, he used gym moves to fight people. It's a movie from the 80s. It's terrible.
Every fight scene takes place on a balance beam.
There are scenes, yeah, where all of a sudden it's like the bad guys are coming in the middle of this town square. Oh, look, that's a lot like a balance beam. Like, yeah.
Any fights on half-constructed buildings where he's on like an I-beam?
No, it wasn't that good.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All the I-beams were just 3 feet off the ground.
They were laying in a parking lot.
That would have been too good for this movie.
Too good. It was the chains between two posts. There were all these locks.
Yeah.
Let's see. It's fantastic to see the whole family involved with an activity they can do together, said Anne-Marie Finner, the club president. Finner introduced each rider and horse as they entered the arena. She and her mom, Carol Shank, kept track of their times and reminded everyone to hydrate their horses. People came from as far away as Battle Mountain, they said. The occasional spill or mishap didn't slow anyone down for long. Any tears dried quickly. The ground was soft and the atmosphere supportive.
All right, so...
What?
Can you read that paragraph again on your best Werner Herzog?
Yes, okay. All right, here we go. The occasional spill or mishap didn't slow anyone down for long. Any tears dried quickly. The ground was soft and the atmosphere supportive.
Usually with the newspaper articles, like if they're going to have a creative flourish, it's like the very first paragraph, yeah. You know, kind of like the hook, you know, narrative hook, where it's just kind of like, you know, the dew was still on the ground.
Yeah.
The horses trampled. It sputtered in the air. The eyes of the hopeful young, you know, they do that. You don't put that in the middle when you've already gone into the information.
Way to bury the lead, Werner. Many members have been with us since the start, said Finner. It's phenomenal to watch them grow in horsemanship and confidence. Here's a name. Riot. Riot Finner rode into the arena for the first time, led by her father and grandpa. Nice.
Ooh, her.
Yeah. The girl's name Riot.
R-I-O-T? Why am I more accepting of that?
She is a superhero.
It's R-I-O-T?
Yeah.
That's great.
Oh, it's a toddler. The toddler glanced at her mom. Wait,
so
she's like
a toddler named Riot that has superb horsemanship.
Yes.
Skills.
So they're strapping babies to full-grown horses.
But the baby's name is Riot. They know she can handle it.
But they're strapping. They named that child for this event.
That's true.
They're strapping babies to full-size horses. And it's the horses that are crying.
Hey, when we have a kid, we're going to strap it to a horse to put in competitions. Oh, that'll be a riot.
Oh, perfect. Wait a second. The toddler glanced at her mom. What are we doing, mom?
I don't know much
about a good idea.
I don't know much about this world, but I know this doesn't seem like a good idea. My name's Wright, and I know this is bad parenting.
I'm just a toddler on a horse named Riot, but I know this is a bad idea.
I know. I'm just a baby over here, but I feel like something's out of place, and I think it's me.
My name's Riot. Welcome to Diapers and Dumbasses.
Others, like Kelsey Collins and Rhea Fenner, rode like old hands, weaving between poles and barrels as fast as they could. while Riot glanced at her mom.
I think the reporter, the writer of this article, understands.
So Riot is the only person at this whole event with any sense.
One of these things is not like the other. One of these things is me.
The writer is trying to save Riot. Here. Yeah, this exactly. is a coded message.
This
here.
Is an intervention. Yeah. And what's a Gymkhana without a rock star or two?
You could have stopped at what's a Gymkhana. That would be nice.
I didn't know. I want to hear the name of the rock star.
Me too.
Okay. Trip Arndt and Marvel Sestinovich. Marvel, that's a rock star name. Earned recognition for their sparkling attitudes and helpfulness.
That kind of rock star.
Wait, is that... Yeah.
That's so the rock star award.
So those are the babies that didn't know what was happening.
Yes.
Like, you got Riot over there like, this is not a good idea. And they're, wee!
Sparkling attitude.
Let me tell you something. When I put on a rock show, the compliment I want to hear at the end of my rock and roll show is that I had a sparkling attitude and I was very helpful. That's what I want to hear after I've rocked out.
That's a way of saying you really didn't sing well.
Right? Those are the compliments I remember getting at the end of Rock of Ages. Yeah. Man, gosh.
Yeah.
You're so helpful. Yeah.
Sparkly.
God, I really loved that Led Zeppelin concert. It was very helpful. Very.
There was that instructional song about how to get up the stairway to heaven. We all should take note. Families headed to the parking lot as the sun began to set. They'll be back. For more information, visit this website.
I'm just going to say this. The author of this article, Peggy Jones, was too good for this event. I strongly believe that. It's not often I can say that. She was too good.
You know, well, you know who was too good for this event?
Riot.
Riot.
Riot
was over it.
It says she glanced at her mom. Didn't say how she glanced.
Yeah.
Gave her the side eye.
Terrified.
Petroglyph to perform at community center. By Peggy Jones.
Isn't that a rock drawing?
Yeah.
Cave drawing? Petroglyph?
Is that a band name?
That's what I'm assuming.
You could do worse.
Yeah, you could. Yeah.
Because it's a rock band.
Yeah.
They're literally sparkly.
And helpful.
Yeah.
I don't understand time. Fortunately, Petroglyph is here to help.
Best opening ever.
Really?
No.
Oh.
All right. But it is Peggy Jones, so buckle up.
All right, I'm ready.
It's set in stone. Soon. Lovelock will have a chance to hear two of the world's oldest musical instruments. There are hundreds of years of stories behind the tabla drums and didgeridoo. The tabla comes from the Indian subcontinent. According to legend, about 500 years ago, a poet dropped a large drum and broke it in half. Tabla, a set of two drums, resulted. Traditionally, drummers play the instrument while seated cross-legged on the floor. Indigenous tribes of Australia's Northern Territory invented the didgeridoo about 1,000 years ago. Some think didges go back even further. Ancient rock paintings show musicians playing them while others sing. So this is a drum and a didgeridoo duo.
What else do you need?
Oh my God, this sounds terrible.
Okay, since you said it first. Since you said it first. I'm probably not the audience for didgeridoo. I'm just going to say the sentence. I don't consider didgeridoo music. like I hear a didgeridoo and I see that as like a call. Like, you know, if you're like out in.
It's because you're old, man. You don't understand his new music. You thinking it's like a Ricola thing? It's just that big horn.
Ricola? Yeah. Ricola? You mean?
Whatever that is.
Ricotta.
Ricola.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I wonder if Ricola in Australia, if they use a didgeridoo.
For their ads?
Yeah.
I'm with you. Do you know why I'm with you? Because I've tried to play it, and I don't think you can get different tones out of it.
You can.
It makes one sound.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Are you sure?
Yes.
All the ones I have were broken. Then.
We had a didgeridoo at one of our improv shows.
And I made one sound.
I made more than one sound.
I didn't make any because it was COVID times and I wasn't passing around instruments.
You're like, I'm happy with the sitar.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, I have heard a number of sounds come out of a didgeridoo and none of them I've considered music.
It's like a call.
It's, you know, it's ass. Like, it's like an ass horn, right?
Oh, butt trumpet?
Yeah.
It's a butt trumpet that you play with your mouth.
Not during COVID times, but normally.
No, no times. No times. Don't put your mouth on that.
That's been in someone's butt.
Sounds like it. But I mean, that, you know, the sound of a didgeridoo to me just sounds like, you know, like you're calling the tribe home. You know, it's just like, okay, the sun is setting. You know, follow the sound.
Yeah. It's a ram horn on the mountaintop.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
That's what I hear. I don't want to put lyrics to what I hear come out of a didgeridoo. No one ever listened to a didgeridoo and thought, love got to do?
So the petroglyph that they saw when they thought people were singing were actually people screaming at the guy to stop.
They were organizing a mob to kill him.
And then the drummer comes, he's trying to drown it out. And I was like, oh, it's a band.
I mean, I imagine all their songs sound kind of like what you did at the beginning of this.
Yes. Has anybody ever actually sung to a didgeridoo? Like, have you ever heard or seen someone do that?
You'd have to have a duo because it'd be impossible to do by yourself.
Yeah, because you can't sing into it while you're didgeridooing.
Aren't you kind of doing that to some degree, though? I mean, there's some humming involved.
Yeah,
there.
It's just like the song where you put the microphone next to you through the wah, 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 wah.
Hey, I'm going to go back to the article. This is it goes into didgeridoos here, if it's okay. I'm going to take over for you, Craig. To make an authentic didgeridoo, indigenous people scout the outback. They search for... Hey, Craig, you want to read this article?
Oh, no.
Boabob?
You can zoom in on it, Keith.
I am zooming in on it. It's just making this word I don't know bigger.
Eucalyptus?
Yeah, I think that's it.
I'm just guessing here.
I don't think I've ever seen that word spelled out. Never thought about how to spell it, but yeah, eucalyptics.
No, that's a band. That's a band with Annie Lennox. That's a
really difficult exercise move.
Remember the eucalyptics?
I'm trying to teach you something. I'm going to use wrong words to do it, but I'm trying to teach you something.
You have to run up a tree perpendicularly.
I am always perpendicularly when I'm running up trees.
They search
for
eucalyptus grooves in areas with heavy termite activity. The winged insects munch away, hollowing out the stem of select trees to create the skeleton of the woodwind instruments. To determine if a tree is hollow, craftspersons
knock on the outside of the tree,
cut it open,
peel back the bark, and tap with their fingernails. If the sound resonates, they strip the bark, apply a rim of... What did I say?
Nothing. Keep going. It's beautiful.
I'm trying to teach you something. Damn it!
That's right. This is
culture.
Learning. This is culture.
I'm just. I have a feeling I'm offended by what you're learning.
Just tell us what kind of rim you put on there.
They strip the bark and apply a rim of beeswax to the mouthpiece. Voila. A didgeridoo. Like, that's it.
See, it doesn't have, like, holes to put your fingers on. That's why you can't change the pitch.
The pitch is what you're producing.
So it is like a big kazoo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Today, people make didgeridoos from a wide range of materials all over the world. Kids even make them from PVC pipe. Writers use words like haunting, droning, and low-pitched to describe the sound.
Any other words they use, Neil?
I actually think they're really cool.
Yeah.
She's a writer. Why would she say that? Because that was her opinion. That was her opinion. She didn't want to put her name to it. You know, some writers.
Some people say.
Who write articles like this one right now. Players learn a breathing technique that lets them continuously vibrate their lips.
Yeah. That's what Kenny G does.
Yeah.
What?
Circle breathing.
Kenny G does circle breathing. Like in through your nose, out through your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So you're constantly
Breathing in as you're blowing out.
Yeah. It's hard.
If it was easy, everybody would do it.
So you're breathing in through your nose while you're breathing out your mouth?
While you're still creating pressure at the front of your mouth.
That's some pat your head, rub your tummy nonsense. Yeah. I don't know how to do that.
Are you able to do that? You
know, no. Yeah. I have a friend who's an incredible musician who was doing it in high school. He teaches. He's a jazz instructor at Central now, I think.
You know, I think it is used in the muscles in your diaphragm as opposed to your lungs. So your lungs are breathing in while you're pushing out.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not really breathing out. Using the force of the...
That's why I said it's creating pressure.
Yeah, exactly.
At your lips. So that,
Yeah, the way they make different pitches is they make didgeridoos from different sizes of trees.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, so you find yourself with a log that you basically fit your whole face into.
And scream.
Yeah. Scream into the void. It's very long. There's beeswax around it, so your face sticks to it. You're just trapped walking
you just
around
scream.
The log. Yeah.
Scream.
A log attached to your face. Ah!
That's how it got invented. Somebody leaned over it, already had beeswax on it. They started screaming.
You could see somebody do that at Burning Man, like in exchange for snacks.
I could see people doing it on either end of the log. So just walking around. And then there's some jackass attaching locks to the middle of the log as they're walking around with their faces glued to it.
So you could go there and play some didge solos for
Burning
for
Man.
Food and whatnot.
I bet you could.
Can't get bathroom time.
They'll pay you to stop.
I would be the 4:30 a.m. didgeridoo guy.
Just so people pay you to go.
Oh God!
Zonked out. They ain't gonna hear you.
Please stop.
I have no doubt they have didgeridoo people playing.
That
at
makes
Burning
way
Man.
Too much sense.
I mean,
they like they're hired.
Crying out loud.
Like
they probably have paid. Like a they probably have like a didge circle.
Oh, they probably like, do.
Next to the drum circle.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Next to the large banjo circle.
You think my people are there?
That's how Burning Man got started. Was burning didges and banjos.
The problem was they were doing these banjo and didgeridoo circles too close to town, and they were like, "Can you go make a festival? Go to the desert.
Go out there where the guns are.
Take that nonsense out there."
It was next to a shooting range. That's how the guns came into play.
Yes, that's why they had the banned guns, because people started firing at the didgeridoo and the banjo players. It's like, that's it. We're banning guns. That's it. Decorative sign marks Derby Field by Deborah Reed. Pershing County Commissioner Larry Rackley knows the economic importance of small rural airports, including Derby Field, south of Lovelock. Do you know this?
No. I was trying to figure out what Derby Field was.
Gotcha.
Because the way that you said it the first time, it smashed it together.
Already upset because reading the headline, I thought it was going to be about
horses.
Hats. Horse hats.
Horse hats.
For toddlers.
For toddlers. Yes.
He has a number of upgrades planned for the county-owned facility that could attract more air traffic and commercial activity to the facility. During a recent tour of Derby Field, the former pilot outlined plans that could encourage more aviators and entrepreneurs to consider the facility for aircraft storage or high-tech research. The rural airport offers less expensive fuel, uncrowded airspace, and plenty of room on the ground.
So nobody wants to go there. So it's good because nobody else wants to go there.
Right. That's your hook. What happens when
cheap
people start
fuel,
going?
It helps to say cheap fuel, space on the ground, uncluttered airspace.
Yes.
Yeah,
gotcha. So we need everybody to come at one time to take advantage of all of this. It will not change.
What are the regulations for setting up your own airfield? Like, if you had a big farm, you think you could just, like, put a sign up, Derby Field?
Yeah, I mean.
So there you go.
We cut to the front of George's house. Mr. Oliver here. So you.
Yes.
Let me get this straight. You want a permit to pave a landing strip.
Yes. Two landing strips. Yes.
In front of your house.
Yes. Right here in the front yard.
I guess the first question is why?
Well, I put it in the front yard because I don't want to interfere with a helicopter pad in the back.
Wait, I was not aware of a helicopter pad.
Here at Oliver Field, I mean, we have the space. There's not a lot of people here. We're right in the middle of town.
Oh,
I mean, it's convenient.
Excuse me, could you step out of the way? I'm trying to get the survey done. Y'all are right.
Don't get in his way.
We are putting the cart before the horse. Or in this case, the airport before the zoning, as it were. Mr. Oliver.
Don't worry. I own this property.
Is it okay if this tree comes down?
Yes, and you're going to need to ask my neighbor about the one next door.
Okay, not a problem.
This is a suburban neighborhood,
yes,
Mr. Oliver.
It is.
You can't just put an airfield. Do you even have a grasp of how much landing strip you need for an aircraft to successfully and safely land?
I'm going to advertise the length of the strip. Yeah, for anybody that wants to come,
I'm so sorry. I don't mean to butt in again. Are we the mooring buoys out there for the seaplanes. Can I go ahead and shoot those? Are those going
to
happen?
Those are good. They need to go right there, right in front.
Right. No, that's a drainage pond. That is a drainage pond. That is not safe for airplanes to land in.
Well, now, hold on. You've never seen an airplane land there. We have zero accidents.
I can tell you, wait, okay, how many airplanes have actually landed anywhere in here?
None. We have zero accidents. It's not happened at all.
I'm sorry, I saw a group of you guys standing here. I'm an Uber driver. Did you need to go somewhere? I'm here to pick you up from the airport.
Wait, no, no, there's no airport. There is no airport.
You're a little
early.
I'm not quite done with the survey yet.
Can you I'll come back.
Can you come back at about 4 o'clock this afternoon?
Yeah.
No, it's impossible. Nothing's going to be ready at 4 o'clock. And there better not be planes on the way that are going to land here at 4 o'clock.
There's one at 3:45. So I've got to get this surveyed.
But you just said the airplane's not going to be ready until 4.
No, that's when the Uber guy's coming.
That's when he's picking me up. I just need to make sure the first plane lands okay.
Yeah. Wait. So are you creating the airport now to land here in a few hours?
Oh, yeah. So you better get out of the way. We've got to get a move on.
You need to stay out of the way of progress.
You're already here. Where are you coming from?
Oh, no. It's another plane landing. I'm setting up the runway. And then I need to go. I'm not flying out of this airport.
It's a bad idea.
It is.
Well, no, hold on. Our rates are very reasonable.
Oh, agreed.
It only costs $15.
I'm from the city. If I say no, none of this should be happening.
Look, it just takes you to the local airport like 5 miles over there.
Right.
That's just jumps back and forth.
It's just convenience. It's to get rid of all the traffic out there. There's no planes landing here right now. Think about all the possibilities.
So people land at our airport and then
land here.
Oh.
Yeah, and then they drive their plane through the streets and they go to the other airport.
You're taxiing airplanes down this suburban street.
Yeah, there's plenty of streets. They're already paved.
So we are
going to got to get them here.
We are going to have to talk about people putting all the power lines and everything underground. So that you're going to have to.
Well, he's
that
from
by
the
this
city.
Afternoon.
Are you working on that?
What
do we pay you for with our tax dollars? You're just sitting here complaining. You need to be part of the solution. The
plane's never going to get through here at this rate.
No, yeah,
you only have until 3:45.
I don't.
Why are you standing here?
No, arguing with me. I'm here to grant permission and zoning.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the permission.
No, I didn't do it. No. That wasn't. No.
You need to be part of the solution or part of the problem.
The solution
Everybody here's on board.
Yeah.
Are you... You're telling me if I go to the house next door...
Well, not them. No, everybody here in the yard. We got Uber driver. We got surveyor. We got property owner. We got 75% of the people.
Excuse me. I see you guys gathering around again. Are you a neighbor? Like, I am the neighbor.
Oh, my God.
My name's Chucky the neighbor. I was just wondering, there's this 75-gallon bucket of fuel just sloshing around. You've parked it in my driveway.
Yeah, you better not drink any of that. Don't take any of that. That's not for you.
You mean to tell me that this bucket of fuel is not for drinking?
Where did you get airplane fuel, and why is it in a huge bucket?
Well, it's not airplane fuel.
Nope, that's airplane fuel.
Oh, I thought it was just 87.
Oh, no. That's airplane fuel.
Oh, it's airplane fuel.
Oh, my God.
It tastes terrible.
Don't drink it.
It doesn't?
You see why we don't need our neighbor's opinion on this? He drinks airline fuel in big buckets in his driveway.
That's actually what gave him the inspiration, as I recall the story.
There's all this airplane fuel. We need an airport.
The air is so thick with the fumes of airline fuel that I... Whoa. And lightheaded.
You want to get in here with me?
What are we talking about?
Power lines underground. Here's a shovel.
Oh, yeah. Let me sign that paper.
And scene.
Call the ball.
It's terrible because my concern became less about the guy trying to put an airplane landing strip in his lawn and more about the neighbor who just sees buckets of liquid and drinks them willy-nilly.
I think I said, you throw this stuff for you to drink. I don't even know where that came out.
I don't know either, but you said it.
I was like, okay, wait, this is serious, but this is a little bit more serious over here. Don't just drink liquid from a bucket.
A little more immediate.
Especially if you don't know where it came from. The only liquid that should ever be, I mean, I guess rainwater will collect in a bucket, but otherwise you milk a cow in a bucket. Like, what else are you drinking out of a bucket?
We're just out here milking airplanes.
Milk
freaking airplanes. You put the fuel in the airplane. You don't take the fuel out.
It's
got to
come from somewhere. It comes from the big airplanes, and you put it in little airplanes.
That's a valid point. Yeah. Or it's in a truck, so it goes from a truck to a plane.
Right, but
Papa,
the
I don't understand
like a
life on the plane farm. Show me once again how to milk the Cessna.
bunch of small town news. Bunch of small town news. Bunch of small town news.
You've just tolerated another episode of Small Town News, a production of Small Town News, LLC.
Today's episode of Small Town News was inspired by the Lovelock Review Minor of Lovelock, Nevada, and stories written by Deborah Reed and Peggy Jones.
Episodes are performed and produced by Keith Boyd, George Oliver, Neil Oliver, and Craig Ramey.
Research by Dr. Jessica Riot Saxon.
Yeah.
Music performed by George Oliver.
This episode was recorded in the historic Clark's Drugstore Building in New Bern, North Carolina.
Small Town News is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon, Facebook Podcasts, and your grandmother's gramophone. Like what you hear? Leave us a review and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram for behind-the-scenes photos, exclusive updates, and opportunities to share your favorite Small Town News.
Thanks for joining us.
And remember...
One of the things that's always fascinating to me when people talk about classical music being stodgy and all that sort of stuff, and I don't listen to a lot of it. I listen to some. But those bastards put canons in musical pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Like current rock and roll stars.
Into the music.
Yeah. Like current rock stars have jack shit on those composers.
Fire cannon here.
Yeah. Yeah. On time. And those things, I mean, you had to know when to light it so that it would, it's not an immediate thing with those.
It's timing.
Yeah.
They used because to be, everybody was asleep.
That woke them up.
Yeah. Third movement, cannons. Yeah, exactly. We've discovered that's where they fall asleep. Cannons.
I got a great idea for the finale. I know everyone's going to be asleep, but trust me on this.
Kaboom.
We're going to get them clapping.
Or creating copper lights.
I found out the other day there used to be banjo orchestras with different sizes and styles of banjos.
No.
And there was one.
That's not music.
Yeah,
wait,
right?
Different sizes of banjo?
Yes. So there's one that was giant that people played like a stand-up bass. Just big old huge
people don't
banjo.
Sing to those. Some have you ever heard anybody sing to drum. A banjo?
You don't want to hear it. It doesn't sound great.
Have I heard it. Or have I wish I'd not heard?
But I really want to get one of those big banjos. And they were really popular around the turn of the century, but you don't really make them anymore.
I've never
maybe
seen
maybe there's
that
a reason.
My... Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
A banjo is not difficult to make, George.
It is. It is. You have to have a
snare
like
drum.
A hide.
Yeah, no, you get a timpani drum. You need to get a timpani drum.
That's what you
oh,
get.
Oh, yeah, I guess you would for that.
Yeah. And then just hammer a piece of wood
piece
next
of
to it. Yeah.
Just a stick.
Yeah, there's a guy out in Vanceboro that'll let you go clear it out of his lot for $100.
Banjo wood for sale. Yeah,
$4,000 banjo. Must pick up wood.
If I ever need to get rid of a tree, that's how I'm going to advertise it strictly to George.
Banjo wood.
Free banjo wood.
Or just free banjo. You must make it and carry it off
must
yourself.
Make it. There's a rotting animal hide and
some
a tree.
Free random banjo. Metal.